Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
As promised, we've got Caps tickets to be won right now. So get those dialing fingers ready. Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Tap those phone numbers now. 10th caller wins a pair of tickets to see the Caps and the Penguins, arch rivals, January 18th, Capital One Arena. For the complete Caps schedule, to purchase tickets, go to thefandc.com.
As the local Washington 53 prepares for the playoffs, building a foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Condori and Morod can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them the Grant Nanny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Coming up in about 25 minutes, we'll get into some of our favorite matchups that Washington can take advantage of against the Bucks. Some of the matchups they've got to be a little bit leery of going into their big game in Tampa. Sunday Night Football looking for their first playoff win since January of 2006, 19 years ago. But let's get to the Beltway Blitz. We start with our buddy Mike Jones of The Athletic to spin around the league with us. Mike, why don't we begin with the first of the six playoff games? Saturday afternoon in 2 days, Chargers-Texans in Houston. The Chargers are a road favorite. It seems like nobody's really given Houston a chance after they went into the playoffs, just disappointing for much of the regular season. Could they be now a sneaky, kind of undervalued team to win a couple playoff games?
I mean, I think it's possible. We haven't seen the consistency out of them that we saw last year, and maybe we just had higher expectations. But it is possible that they can win this game here. You know, obviously, they like to run the football. The Chargers, Jim Harbaugh likes to. He likes to have balance, even though Justin Herbert has come on late this season, had a heavier passing load. But this Texan defense is pretty stingy against the pass. They hold teams to about 200 yards a game, and I think the passer rating is one of the league leaders, and they also are among the league leaders in interceptions. And so, you know, you got two guys in that secondary who have five interceptions apiece. And so if you can take away the run and force them to have to throw the football, maybe it's possible they can force Justin Herbert into some mistakes, but that's going to be challenging because I think he only threw three interceptions this year, which is one of the lowest for full-time starters in the league this year. So it's going to be intriguing. I think the Chargers are the more well-rounded, consistent team and that they'll wind up winning this thing, but I guess you never know.
I think it's a big deal there's no Zay Flowers this weekend for Baltimore, but nobody seems to think it's going to make that much of a difference because Pittsburgh can barely tie its own shoes. What do you think?
You know, I originally was thinking that maybe it wouldn't be that big of a deal, but then I looked back in the last game and he had five catches for 100 yards. And even though he didn't have any touchdowns, it still was instrumental in helping their offense move up and down the field. And it's just one less guy that the defense can commit to slowing down Mark Andrews or keeping an eye on Lamar Jackson or Derrick Henry. Rashad Bateman's going to have to step up because, you know, he can be hot, he can be cold, he can be really unreliable at times. But I do think they might miss him just because of the way that you move Zay Flowers all over the place. He can stretch the field. He puts pressure on the defenses with the variety of ways they use him.
Allen or Lamar, who's your MVP?
Lamar is. I mean, when you look at, you know, 4,500 passing yards, 900 rushing yards, 41 touchdown passes, only three interceptions. That's four interceptions. Anyway, that's just ridiculous. And, you know, he didn't really have any bad games this year. There were a couple games that Josh Allen didn't look great. I do think that he's right up there. He had to put on the Superman cape every single week. But Lamar Jackson, just what he did this year, jumping from his second year in the system with Todd Monken, he's my MVP.
Green Bay and Philadelphia, make a case for each team as to why they win.
Well, as far as Philadelphia, they have the most punishing rushing attack. They have the weapons on offense with A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. We'll see if there's any rust with Jalen Hurts, but they can lean on their running game. They'll bail them out even if there is some early on rust. I'm having a hard time seeing the Packers win this thing, not only because we don't know how effective Jordan Love will be with that injured elbow on his throwing arm, but they also don't have Christian Watson. They're going to also have to lean on their rushing attack. Josh Jacobs, I think he got overlooked a little bit. He did have a really dynamic season, 1,300 yards, 16 rushing touchdowns. They do have a good secondary, so maybe they can try to, stifle or contain A.J. Brown. Then the problem is then you got Devontae Smith, and then, you start locking in on the pass. Then you got Saquon Barkley running wild. So it's going to be really hard for the Packers.
Is McVay going to regret resting his guys and basically choosing the loser of Vikings, Lions, instead of Washington?
I don't know. That's a really good question, but we've seen McVay take unconventional approaches. They did beat the Vikings earlier this year, 30-20. Darnold is the one that's got all the pressure on him. He's got to be able to bounce back. He did not handle the pressure well last week. So we'll see if he can, kind of shake that off of him and get back to the way he was.
Mike, thank you, buddy. Enjoy the weekend.
All right, I'll see you guys.
Be well, my friend. We got a little college football sounder. Hit it. I like that big voice guy. Our pal, Denton Day, the Denton Day. Produces for Kevin Sheehan Show, Burgundy Gold Game Day, all over the place. Our buddy Denton joins us to break down the college foosball. If and when Ohio State wins this national title here, Denton, do you think fans will still want him fired?
No, my long-lost uncle Ryan Day will not have calls for his head if they win a national championship. As big of a rivalry as Michigan is, and as much as losing to Michigan sucks, a national championship trumps all of that. So he'll be good if he wins it, when he wins it.
I'm going to go back to tonight's game. Let's just start there. We got a kickoff a few hours away in the semifinal round here. Notre Dame gets past Georgia, and now they take on Penn State. Who do you like tonight? What can you tell us?
A slight lean is in the direction of Penn State, which is crazy because that means James Franklin has to win a big game against a team that has been in the Power Four conferences for more than a calendar year, which is insane to predict. But I like what they have offensively a little bit more in terms of the versatility than that of Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame is a great running the football team, but if you ask Riley Leonard to throw, can he? Will he? That's the biggest question with them right now, fellas. They don't have a quarterback that I trust to go out there and make throws. And it's not like Drew Aller is this absolute, next coming of a quarterback, but he's a little bit better than Riley Leonard when asked to perform. So I have a very, very slight lean in the direction of Penn State.
So for Penn State, they've had a pretty, if there is such a thing in a college football playoff, we haven't done this before, Denton, so this is all sort of trial and error. But Penn State's had a fairly easy road as far as those things go in terms of getting to this point, and they might end up in the national championship game, probably playing the worst of these four teams, with all due respect to a Notre Dame squad that's pretty good. So, A, just do you agree with that? And, B, what tweaks need to happen for this format as we go forward? This is year one, so some hiccups are expected, but what would you change?
I would change the way that they seed them. Once you get your 12, you should then seed from that standpoint, right? And you need to really emphasize that getting a bye is a good thing, because what happened was Oregon, who beat Penn State, their first matchup was against Ohio State, the juggernaut, whereas Penn State, who loses in that Big Ten championship game, gets SMU in the cold in an arena that's nearly triple the size that SMU is used to playing in. And then they get Boise State. So, like, you have to be able to, once you get the 12 teams, once you get all those things settled out, to then seed from there. Because if you do that, there's no opportunity that Penn State is going to play the two teams they start off with simultaneously. And then inversely, the number one team is not going to get this juggernaut that is Ohio State, because you can say, all right, you're in this, but we know Ohio State is a little bit better than what they were going to end up being seeded as because of some of the buys in the conference alignment. So I think once you get the 12, you then have to reseed from there to figure out who should be what number.
Denton Day, you hear him before Commanders games here on 106.7 The Fan. Of course, produces the Kevin Sheehan Show. Notre Dame, a 1.5-point favorite tonight for a kickoff slated for 7:30 against Penn State in the 7-6 matchup. And then tomorrow's game, as we have five straight nights of playoff football collegiately and in the NFL, number 8 Ohio State in terms of the seeding of the 12 teams here, and number 5 Texas. Ohio State, the Buckeyes, after shredding Oregon, 5.5-point favorites. Do you think Texas can knock them off? And the Buckeyes have just looked like an absolute machine in their two games here.
I think they have the best opportunity, but a lot has to go right. And a lot of that is going to fall on the shoulders of Quinn Ewers, the guy that this time last week was rumored to be a $6 million quarterback on the open NIL market when he eventually leaves Texas. Can he actually prove to be that? Ohio State's offense is so good because while we are in this era, fellas, of transfer portal, if you look at their defense, they got a lot of dudes that have been there for a couple of years. That's a real big benefit to have. Everybody's locked in. I think Sark for Texas is the best offensive mind in college football. So him going up against Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator for Ohio State, that's incredibly exciting. But I don't think they get it done. I think Ohio State, they're going to win the national championship. At this point, anything less than winning the national championship for Ohio State should be considered somewhat of a failure.
Super quick, can you believe Carson Beck is transferring? You mentioned the portal. That seems crazy to me. What better situation is there than one of the three or four best programs in the country?
There is none, but fellas, I'll tell you this. If old Riverboat Ron gets the Jets job, they're going to draft Carson Beck in the 6th round next year or 2 years from now and say, well, he was the number one overall pick at one point. This is turning out to be Sam Howell 2.0.
Good thing.
I don't know how he thinks going to a worse program is going to help him out, but go for it, son. If the money's there, you might as well chase it.
Well, are we sure that he's choosing to leave and they're not telling him they like their other guy
like the
more?
Other kid?
It's probably a little bit of both, but generally speaking, if you're going to put your name in the NFL draft and then decide to take your name out of the NFL draft and hit the portal, it's usually because people in the NFL said this is probably not it. And then Georgia was like, well, you might also not be it too. So it's probably a little bit of both. But right now, Georgia just lost. They lost another quarterback earlier this week. So they're down two quarterbacks now. They're going to be very active going against somebody else.
Denton, die.
Denton, die.
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 Day, Bruce Allen style, day on Grant and Danny. Thank you, Denton.
See you, buddy.
Fellas, appreciate it.
All the best to you, sir. We will see you in studio tomorrow. Let's keep it moving. And end on the local football operation with Nick Astrew. You know him from the BetQL Network. Nicholas, how do you feel about the matchup with Tampa Bay that Washington drew?
I'm like cautiously optimistic, right? Because we've talked about this before. You go into this season and the expectations are generally low. Rookie quarterback, rebuilding team. But once you get new evidence, you can change your opinion and your expectations. So like, I'm not going into this game going, well, at least made the playoffs. That's cool. I mean, they're 3-point dogs in this. They're on the road in Tampa, and I expect that. I think my concern for me is just kind of the up and down final stretch to the season that we got. And, you know, the first half with Jaden Daniels and what we saw and like some of those little things that just linger. And I'd say the bigger thing overall is, okay, regular season's one thing, but you have a rookie quarterback in the playoffs. What does that look like in his first playoff game? But then again, everything we've seen from Jaden Daniels exceeds expectations, defies logic, and he finds ways in the fourth quarter to bring this team back and win. So Commander's magic, whether it's Jaden Daniels or Marcus Mariota, always just seems to find a way late in games.
And Nick, you mentioned this, but at one point this year, their run game, I'm not talking about Jaden Daniels bailing him out, but their actual run game looked as good, probably not quite as good, but almost as good as you in a Taylor sort of fitted blazer, kind of your V-taper exposed, and everyone could sort of see how nice you look, and they can imagine you without a shirt on, and then they get happy. Later this year, it's looked like kind of me in an oversized coat, like a starter jacket that doesn't fit, with like my shirt kind of half untucked into sweatpants. Why the difference? What has happened? And you're handsome.
Well, first off, this is a hell of a visual, so I appreciate the visual right off the bat as we go through this. Yeah, it's just, I think one of the things that's frustrated me with this is, you know, Brian Robinson, we know at his peak, can obviously carry the ball, you know, 20-something times in a game and can be a workhorse back for them. But we weren't seeing that consistently throughout the year. We saw the fumbles late in the year from Brian Robinson. I'd love to see more of Chris Rodriguez. Another kind of similar backs. We don't really have, if you don't have Austin Eckler, which, you know, they do now again. But, like, when you don't have Austin Eckler, you don't really have that change of pace back. I think that really hurt them because you got to have more than just kind of what Brian Robinson does. if they can establish the run early in this game, I think that's going to be a major focal point for them and really something to kind of take some of the pressure off of Jaden Daniels early. And again, listen, we know on the other side of things, they suck at stopping the run. Like, I know they had some good second halves against Saquon Barkley and Bijan Robinson, but for the most part, they have struggled against the run. And Bucky Irving on the other side, that guy is the speed back that I'd love to see in burgundy and gold. That would be like the guy that I'd like to see them have next year. And that's the thing you got to watch on the other side of things. So if this becomes a battle of running backs, Tampa's got the advantage in that side of things.
What do you think about Lattimore versus Evans?
Oh, God, I can't wait to watch this. Seriously, guys, like when you're talking about individual matchups, it doesn't get better than those two. The rivalry that's there, I mean, it is going to be absolutely beautiful. It's clear that when you look at Evans, I mean, this is a guy that everybody loves on that team. I think he gets a ton of targets. I think they're going to be looking for him the entire game. And that to me is the number one individual matchup that I cannot wait to watch this weekend.
Nick, you're the best. Enjoy the weekend, pal.
Love you guys.
See you, man.
Nicholas Ashew, BetQL. Go check him out there. I have in my hand the Commander's injury report.
Oh, no.
Right here. If you're watching on YouTube, it looks like a picture of the McCourty.
But it's the backside of the report.
It's actually the injury report, though. I have it right here. Two players have gone backwards from yesterday, doing less practice than they were yesterday. We'll give you the details on the injury report next on Grant and Danny. All right, here's your Commander's injury report as we welcome you back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. So the good news is for Washington, Marshawn Lattimore with that hamstring for the second straight day practiced in full. He is going to go.
That's good.
He is going to go head-to-head with Mike Evans in the matchup we have been waiting for. Thank you very much, audience. Jaden Daniels with that quad, whatever's going on with that, where he said his legs were tired and that's why, partially, he didn't play in the second half. He has been full go in back-to-back days.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
No restrictions there for Jaden Daniels. Special teams going to get a boost as well after missing the last couple of weeks with a hamstring. Jordan McGee, back-to-back days. Full participant. And then I got even more good news for you. Two guys who couldn't get through all of practice. We're limited yesterday.
Okay.
We're full go today. So they've been elevated. They're doing more. They're trending in the right direction. And looks like it'll be a clean sheet for Jeremy Chinn at safety with a rib and Brandon Coleman at left tackle with a knee. Both of those guys.
That's big news, yeah.
Full participants.
That's good.
In practice.
Now we got to do the medicine.
Now here's the rub a little bit here. All right.
Do we have an audience grown, by the way?
Frankie Louvu, with a shoulder, who practiced in full on Wednesday, was limited today.
Oh, no.
Oh, Frank, yeah, that'll do it.
Limited?
Limited.
Very limited.
Very, very limited.
Very,
very, very limited.
Now, they didn't say, there's nothing on the injury report that says very, very limited.
Extremely limited.
In Ron Rivera's voice.
Yep. Very limited.
But he was limited after being full yesterday. I never liked seeing that.
No,
as the week
I don't like that
on.
Trend.
On a Thursday. And the other one was big tight end John Bates. Not that they can run the ball anyway, but he's kind of important in helping to block in the running game. Shoulder problem. He and Frankie Louvu dealing with the same thing.
Oh, no.
Shoulder that was not much of a problem yesterday that was more of a problem today, apparently.
Oh, no.
Now, here's what I don't know. Is it possible that yesterday's practice was a little bit less active and physical, like a jog through, a little bit less tense.
A little more walky.
Maybe it's an hour and they're going through some motions. And then today they ramp it up a little bit. And so you're actually asking more of the players. So, yeah, I could do a full jog through yesterday in the bubble or whatever. And then today we go outside and you want me to actually run around and do a real practice. But I'm limited even though I'm still getting more healthy. That's kind of what I'm hoping for.
I think that's a reasonable theory, right?
Yeah, that's what JP Finley on our midday show was saying yesterday. He was saying yesterday that it was more of a jog through, walk through type practice yesterday. Today was the more ramped up practice.
Okay.
So that tells you that they're probably trending where they need to be. They're going in the right direction to being able to play on Sunday. But you never like, you know, just so you know, the bold in the injury report denotes a change.
Yeah, this is new, right? This is so, an escalation or the, bold the other good. Way. The decline, bold
says full, and it was limited, mm-hmm. and now they practice. Today you got a couple of guys who were limited that were full, but I think it's just that the workload ramped up,
yep.
the amount of physicality of the practice trended up. So tomorrow, hopefully, they're full go and more of a Friday jog through before a Sunday traditional game.
Yeah, the trend you like is Cleveland Farrell, DNP Wednesday, limited Thursday. That is a good trend line. That's arrow trending up. You're hoping that he's good to go by Friday, Saturday, into Sunday. You don't like to see kind of the new thing popping up if that is the deal.
Dan Quinn basically said on Monday, and I don't know, you know, how much of this is gospel or just him saying what he wanted out there to maybe portray some confidence,
mm-hmm.
but he basically made it sound like they weren't really that concerned about injuries at all at the beginning of the week. He said he liked where they were going into the playoffs. He said you can't really ask for a better situation. I'm paraphrasing, but that told me right then and there, after he'd already said Lattimore had been sprinting and the arrow was trending up, that he wasn't concerned about Daniels, that in terms of the really important players on this team, he thought they were going to be available and that they weren't overly concerned about any of the stars. Tyler Biadasz will be at center. Wasn't last week, probably to make sure that that was the case. Lattimore, same thing. Maybe he could have gutted it out, gone out there less than 100%,
mm-hmm.
and really pushed it on that hamstring.
Chance to aggravate, though.
But they knew, hey, man, we got a playoff game coming. If you're 80%, let's get to 100 next week.
Yeah, regardless of our opponent, we need you. So, yeah.
Seems like that was kind of the plan. We got John Keim coming up in a half hour at 5 o'clock. Wrote the story today for ESPN on Cliff Kingsbury and the fact that it's going to be hard to pry him away from Washington because he enjoys working with Jaden Daniels. So we'll talk to Keim about that. But let's get into Commanders Bucks here. I want to dive into a matchup we really like and a matchup that we don't. So give me your favorite matchup that you want Washington to take advantage of that you figure to be ideal in this game.
My answer is Austin Ekeler against pretty much everybody, right? Whether it's Levante David, whether it's, you know, J.J. Russell, whether it's a safety walking down. I think you've got an advantage with Austin Ekeler over pretty much anybody. I don't want to play smash mouth and run inside where Vita Vea and Kalijah Kansi live. I don't want to do that. If you want to make them run sideline to sideline, I'm all in favor of that. Maybe get them off the field a couple different times. Maybe go old school Kyle Shanahan with personnel groupings that make it so that, you know, the big smart cars have to do extra work. I don't know. But to me, I like Ekeler on pretty much everybody that they got. More physical than a lot of the safeties and corners and quicker and more agile than their linebackers. I think that is a huge matchup advantage for them.
Yeah, my favorite matchup for the Commanders to take advantage of is going to be the short and intermediate passing game. And I think Ekeler, who you just referenced, is going to be a big part of that. But if I'm isolating it to a player in a one-on-one, let's say, then I would point to maybe Terry McLaurin against either Jamel Dean, who's been on and off the injury report, or like Zion McCollum, like either one of their corners. In fact, normally Dean lines up on the right side, which would mean a lot of Terry McLaurin. Dean's a former third-round pick who's played at a high level at times in the league. But I like Terry having a decent game. I don't think the Tampa corners are a strength. That secondary is not a strength. I actually like Washington's second receiver at any given moment, whether that's Alamide Zaccheaus or De'Ami Brown or anybody else that they trot out there like Jamison Crowder.
I like Ertz, too, in this one, yeah.
Well, to your point.
I know you're talking about receivers, I know. But
just wide receiver. Mm-hmm. I like them working against the secondary. And then lastly, to get to Ertz, who we've talked a lot about, in last week, Juwan Johnson of the Saints went like 8-for-80 against Tampa Bay, and they've given up big numbers, some crooked numbers to tight ends all year. One of the things that they love to do is they walk a fifth, sometimes a sixth guy up on the line of scrimmage, and they say, you're not running the ball on us. We've got Vita Vea, we've got Kalijah Kansi, we've got Yaya Diaby, who's just kind of standing there. They'll go 5 and 6 man fronts, and they will make you throw the football. Why this is the philosophy, I'm not really sure, because it's not what Bowles has always done. But if you watch them, this is their bit this year. It's Logan Hall, Vita Vea, Kalijah Kansi, Tryon Shoyinka, and then it's whoever they walk up, whether it's David on the interior or Diaby on the outside. Well, when they do that, they are susceptible in that kind of middle area, that underbelly of the defense for tight ends running those pop and quick routes, those little stop routes underneath, little slants and stuff. And I do think Ertz is going to catch 6, 7, 8 balls in this game potentially if they do what they've done most of the year and just give teams that underneath stuff.
Yeah, it's but here's the rub off it, though, is, you know, they're all so aware of stuff. Todd Bowles is really good at this in terms of concocting some of that pressure. Look at what Atlanta did, for example. Showed some of those blitzes and had a guy back off that fooled Daniels for that interception right there. Just really good defensive play to get a red zone turnover early on in that Atlanta game. Maybe, you know, Tampa has shown something, and then that one time when they needed on, call it third and six or whatever, that's when they bail out and there's a guy there that you don't anticipate. The point is that you're going to expect the unexpected here in this game in terms of pressure and how to align stuff. But on paper, I think your point's 100% right, and we're both kind of feeding out of the same trough here. I think that short and intermediate passing game, I've circled Ertz and Eckler, to me, are going to have very nice games. Because I think they're recognizing the way anybody, any opponent of Washington is going, the guy that can really kill us and beat us and you know, come up with some chunk plays and big yardage is McLaurin. We're going to bracket him. We're going to make Zaccheaus and Dyami Brown and Jamison Crowder and this cast of misfits beat us. So, but included with that part and parcel, I think, is some of the underneath stuff, some of the stuff in the flat where you make one guy miss, or, you know, Ertz can kind of continue to work box out style, old school Antonio Gates back to the basket type stuff to be able to get some easy yards and easy completions going where you can maybe get to some of the more explosive stuff.
Yeah, Jaden Daniels, I think all year long, has also been exceptional at taking what he's been given, too. But not forcing things. If you want me to throw the ball short, I'm happy to do it.
Sure.
If you're going to give me the flat in either direction, I'm not going to go broke. I'll take that profit. 4, 5, 6 yards at a time. What is interesting about Washington's offense, though, which we've joked early in the year, we called the horizontal raid.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up throwing more balls downfield 40-plus yards than anybody in the league.
Isn't that interesting?
They kind of lull you into that sense of security where it's, you know, paper cut, paper cut, paper cut, paper cut. And then you start to squat on some of that stuff a little bit. And then they try to get you over the top. It's also a strength of Daniels and has been since his college career to throw the deep ball. Now, it almost is always the deep ball along the sideline. Seems like that's what he really wants to do. Think about some of the Dyami deep shots or the Terry throws down the field.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's running the deep posts and stuff more in the middle of the field, he's overshot a bunch, if you think about it this year, to McLaurin.
Anecdotally, I think you're right.
The stuff along the sideline outside the numbers, I mean, he is pretty sharp, like drops those in the bucket.
Think of that McLaurin touchdown both in Cincinnati or down the field against Philadelphia, that corner route, just drop it into the bucket there.
The Dyami throw from his goal line to midfield. The Dyami touchdown against Cleveland early in the
year. That's right, good pull.
On the sideline, down the field into the end zone. Like, the closer to the white paint, it seems like the more accurate typically he is. And that shouldn't be a shock. Like, everybody makes fun of this and jokes about this. But one of the knocks on Daniels coming into the season, which is kind of bared out, is like down the field, middle of the field, has not been a huge part of their passing game. But the outside stuff is almost automatic. And I would dare to say he's been one of the best deep ball throwers in the league on some of that outside stuff since moment one. Remember the preseason game?
Absolutely, we checked to it.
I want to say it was like his second throw, maybe.
Yeah, the first one he threw Jay Schrader style, 98 up and out of the zone, like a pitch out.
I don't even remember
that. Oh, it was a bingus. It was supposed to be a little dump off screen, and he Schradered it. I mean, he threw it so hard, so high.
This was in the Jets preseason game?
Yeah, preseason game. Then the next pass play, he checked to this. Let me put one in the bucket down the field to old Dyami.
He dropped a 40-yard pass just right in over top of, you know, the outstretched hands of a defender with a step for his receiver, and it was perfect. But, like, he's done that most of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can get a couple of those in this secondary. I fully expect a couple of huge plays in the passing game for Washington because the Bucs will allow you to hit on a few of those as much as they're missing bodies in that secondary.
Yeah, I don't see them running the ball effectively. So you still have to matriculate it. Talking about Washington. So what are you going to do? Are you just going to beat your head against the wall?
Well, do what they've done for a month.
And that's kind of my point
here. Jaden Daniels is your running game.
Yeah.
And the short passing game is your running game.
And that's what I think happens. So, you know, I think they'll show some of the run looks so they can do stuff off of it. Because you have to demonstrate a willingness at least to do it here and there to get to the Daniels keepers, to get to the bootlegs, to get to some of the play action stuff. I don't think they're going to do the thing where they beat the head against the wall. They did that. I'm trying to remember the opponent. Maybe it was Atlanta. But there was somebody, they go, we're sure we can run the ball against this team. Maybe it was New Orleans. We can absolutely run it. It's a matter of time. And they kept doing it and doing it and doing it, and they couldn't at any point through four quarters. And then it was like, sorry, our offense has been bad today. Jaden, could you fix it? I don't think that's the plan here this week.
One of the keys to winning in the playoffs is always just going to be protecting the football. I want to look at both of these teams as it pertains to turnovers and putting the ball in harm's way. Baker Mayfield, one of the worst in the league at it this year again. And Jaden Daniels, who for the first half of the season was maybe the best in the league at it, certainly among the young guys. But it trended more kind of middle of the pack as the year went on in terms of his ability to protect the football and not throw interceptions. We'll get to that next. Grant and Danny on The Fan. With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. John Keim of ESPN joins us in 15 minutes at the top of the hour. He wrote about Cliff Kingsbury today. One of the reoccurring themes of these last couple of weeks is Kingsbury as a candidate for head coaching jobs and whether or not he would consider not only taking interviews but potentially walking from Washington. We'll talk to Keim about that coming up. We've been digging in on some of the Commanders-Bucks matchups that we like. Let's get into some matchups that we worry about a little bit. You can call us at 800-636-1067. The lines are open now. MGM National Harbor listener lines, 800-636-1067. Danny, you get first crack at this. Matchup you worry the most about?
Cheating a little bit because I'm going to pick two guys. All right, and really a total of five, which, I, by the way, that makes five guys. I would love some five guys right now. Kalijah Kancey and Vita Vea against Washington's interior. A not 100% Tyler Biadasz to go on right in the middle with Nick Allegretti and a semi-vulnerable, more so than maybe before, Sam Cosmi. That interior, to me, is terrifying. I see that's the shortest distance between 2 points. Them bull rushing and disrupting up the middle, I see it as a disruption to the run game. I see it as just as a disruption to anything or everyone that Washington wants to get going. I see that as a huge disadvantage in this game. That part of the offensive line is the weakest, and that part of the Tampa's defense is the absolute strongest. 16 sacks, give or take, between those two guys. And they're not known as pass rushers. They're just giant smart cars that eat worlds like Galactus.
Jalen McMillan, number two wide receiver for Tampa Bay that they move around. They've been playing him in the slot a lot more over the last couple of weeks. But they will put him inside. They will put him outside. If you look at his rookie numbers, they're not going to jump out at you. 37 catches is fine. 460 yards is okay. He did catch 8 touchdowns, which tells you he made some plays in the red zone. In fact, his first touchdown of the year came in his first ever game in week 1, his only catch in his debut, which came against Washington. And it was a 32-yard catch and run for a touchdown, if I remember correctly. And I haven't seen it here lately, but it was like a corner route kind of into the paint. He made a nice catch over his shoulder and kept running. But let's say Evans and Lattimore are just locked up and Lattimore travels, which is going to happen almost certainly. I can't tell you how that's going to go other than I don't think Evans is a 10 catch for 178 guy. He's a 10 catch for 107 guy, you know, or 115 or 120 guy. And the question is, does he catch a touchdown or two? But it's a good matchup for Lattimore, who's physical, who can lean on him. And if the referees, and we're going to get into the officiating crew tomorrow, because I've done some research on that for tomorrow's show already, which will be out and about at Hyde Social Bar in Clarendon. If you want to come out to the show in Arlington, 2 to 6:30 for our little pep rally tomorrow as we get ready for Commanders Bucks, you should definitely join us. Should be a great time out there. But if he's allowed to be handsy and physical, I could see him having a really good matchup with Evans. What about McMillan on Mikey Sanders still, who's had an amazing season, is going to be a great player, but it's still, he giveth, he taketh away occasionally at corner. He's an inside nickel playing outside. He's played really well. He's had an awesome year, but it's not shut down, and nor should it be. That shouldn't be the expectation. Noah Igbinoghene got beat a good bit this past week in that Dallas game playing against his former team. What about McMillan against him in the slot? McMillan last week, 74 yards. Second time in 4 games, he's gone 5 for 75 or better. He's caught a touchdown in every single one of the last 6 games that he's played in. He's had 2 touchdown games in that time. I worry a little bit about him putting up some numbers in the passing game and having something like 7 for 105 and a touchdown in this game.
Yeah, if you're just tuning in to the Tampa Bay Bucks this year, You look at his first, I don't know what you would call it, 7-8 games, and it's like a total of 10 receptions for just over 100 yards. You're like, what are you guys talking about? Why is anyone concerned with this dude whose overall numbers are nothing? Well, look at since really the beginning of December. 4 for 59, 2 touchdowns. 5 for 75, a touchdown. 5 for 57, a touchdown. 5 for 51, 2 touchdowns. 5 for 74, a touchdown. That doesn't sound like some slot receiver. It doesn't sound like some nobody. That's a feature player. That is not a coincidental thing that just sort of happened to happen a couple different times. This is now someone that they are targeting, 6-7 targets per game per week. He has really come on down the stretch with some numbers that would make a lot of number ones jealous, quite frankly, in terms of consistency there. A key complement to having Evans on one side, Irving there underneath doing a little bit of everything, and he's become a really important target for them, and he's been awesome.
The other one I'll go with here is Bucky Irving. I guess, you know, it's hard to say who his matchup is in the running game.
Washington's defense.
I guess I'd go Bobby Wagner just because he's like the Mike linebacker responsible for plugging gaps and getting them on the ground in the interior. But he'll make people miss. He'll make you wrong occasionally as you're trying to get him on the ground tackling a running back. There's going to be a few times where it feels like they've got him stopped, you know, dead to rights, and all of a sudden he makes a move. Now, if you look at 8-plus down percentage, meaning how often he faces an 8-man box, what would you guess for the Bucs? Like, how often does a team just load up and try to stop the run?
I would say very rare. I mean, you're with Baker Mayfield throwing for north of 40 touchdown passes.
Right.
10% of the time on third and short, maybe?
So it's 15%.
There you go.
It's a really low total. Just as a comparison, against the Chargers, who are running all the time, like Gus Edwards faced 8-man box 33% of the time. He was their short yardage guy. But Derrick Henry is a good example with the Ravens, full-time back. He faced an 8-man box 33% of the time this year. Najee Harris of the Steelers, 27% of the time. Joe Mixon of the Texans, 26% of the time. David Montgomery of the Lions, their thumper, 25% of the time. So they get light boxes, and then they let Bucky Irving work. And I think they trust Baker Mayfield to get them into those looks, too. Like, when they spread you out, 11 personnel, when they empty it out and then bring him into the backfield, if you don't adjust and you've only got 4 guys, 5 guys, 6 guys ready to stop the run, Baker goes to those runs and really gets them into some advantageous situations, I think, too. But Irving has just had, it's no longer sneaky. It's no longer, you know, a story because I think it's been talked about
so
much.
Yeah, it's like it's not new anymore.
But just an amazing year. One of my favorite stats, you know this, is rushing yards over expected. And the only way to really do it is per attempt because everyone has different numbers of carries. But RYOE, so we've talked about this on the show, but it's a little nerdy. But whatever's blocked for you with the chip data is, you know, given, and then you get more or less than that. Well, as an example, Derrick Henry, who almost had 2,000 yards, and Saquon Barkley were the best two in the NFL in this category, right? Bucky Irving finished ranked 5th in the NFL among qualified backs in RYOE. Almost one more yard then gets blocked for him on every single run.
That's a remarkable number.
So I think he's going to make some of the Washington defenders miss some tackles in this game. I'd be shocked if he doesn't.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of those things they're gonna have to live with, right? Just because everything else is so terrifying. And you hope you don't have a Barkley situation, right? Where, yeah, if you go for 7 on first down, you're still alive. You can still live to fight another down. It's that go for 60. It's the, you know, the breakaway type stuff. You got to keep some contained. And when you get a chance to get a guy down in the backfield, it's got to be that rally stuff, right? It's got to be one guy holds him up and, you know, he's going to run through an arm tackle, talking about Irving. He's good enough to do that. But there are going to be a few plays where whether it's Daron Payne knifes in or maybe it's a linebacker that's blitzing where it looks like you got him penned in. You got to maintain that. You got to force this team to be one-dimensional. They're excellent. Talking about Tampa's offense, especially here in the second half, as they've played some bad opponents. And I got news, Washington as a defense ain't great. So they've really taken advantage. If you can make them second and third and long, just like you know, everyone else is a little bit worse in those kind of circumstances. But that, to me, is the key for Washington's defense, to maybe force some of those forces from Baker Mayfield. That, to me, is your path, right? Is you make Bayfield is what I was calling. That's Baker and Mayfield combined into Bayfield. You make Bayfield go YOLO. You make Bayfield go, I can fit it in there. That's your chance to me.
Reminds me, I did not get into the numbers that we've got to go through on turnover-worthy plays and giving the other team a chance. with Daniels' interceptions being ramped up in the last third of the season and Mayfield being worst in the NFL in that area, so we can do that next hour. But let's talk to John Keim next. Wrote a great piece on Cliff Kingsbury today, what he meant to this offense this year and whether or not he might be on the move after Washington's playoff run ends. We will continue talking Commanders-Bucks next on The Fan.